Hey everyone, I'm Alicia, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 15th, 2010. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. I sponsor women. And my home group is the Friday night 8 o'clock speaker meeting at the South Florida Group in Hollywood, Florida. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I was born and raised in Florida. I had a pretty rough upcoming childhood. I lived in a pretty chaotic home, and there was a lot of parties, lots of parties, and it always looked fun to me. So I don't remember exactly what age I was when I first took a drink, but I would say it was probably around 10 or 11 because I had a bedtime and I would beg to stay up past my bedtime and my mom would say, well, if you make the drinks, you can stay up. So that's what I did and I became like this great little bartender, like, and I was so, you know, I don't remember a lot of things that my mom like patted me on the back and said you did a good job or she liked something in particular, but this I remember. That I made a perfect drink, that I never dripped a drop, the ice was perfect, and the ratio to, you know, the rum and the Coke was perfect, and so that made me feel good about myself, and this is like a cool thing. So I started taking sips. You gotta take the sips off the top to make sure that it's at the perfect level so it doesn't drip over, you know? So, very young age, drinking alcohol was already very important to me. And I believe that's what my alcoholism is. It's the value that I placed on it. It's not how long I drank or how much I drank or where I drank or what I drank, but how much it meant to me. And how I traded so much for it. Because I had dreams that I wanted to be a judge. I wanted to go to college. I wanted a nice home with a white picket fence. I just didn't have that. I lived in this rundown trailer, rats running in the walls, you know, bug infested. Hopefully there's food in the fridge kind of thing, you know? But with all this motivation to get out and do better, booze came first. And so without knowing it, I slowly started making it the most important thing in my life. I started skipping school. That was cool. And the people that I skipped school with, they drank. So that's what I would do, and I just remember feeling, like, cool, and, like, I fit in, because the schools that I had gone to, and I always got picked on. I got this red hair, freckles, too skinny, and when my mom would buy the booze, and, you know, anybody invited me over. Now I have friends and all that. And I love that feeling, being accepted and feeling like I could have fun, like just dance and, you know, whatever. Because I couldn't do that before. I felt like I couldn't. I didn't know how. So I found out probably around 12 or 13 that my mom had HIV. And so, you know, I'd sit there and I'd think, oh, what is it going to be like without her, like, at my prom or at my wedding or if I have children, you know, I'm like way too young to be thinking about these things, but these are the things I'm thinking about. And so there's a lot of fear, a lot of things I didn't know what to do with this information. And she was sick in and out of the hospital a lot. And, you know, by the time I was 15, I was pretty out there. I was already just angry and drunk and pretty nuts. Yeah. And I'd already been arrested because I get drunk and violent, just angry. I was so angry. So anybody I could get my hands on, sorry. Like, it's going to be a rough day for you or a rough night. Because everything that was pent up inside of me would come out. So unfortunately, that happened. And that even made me even more angry after, you know, going to jail and being in the back of a cop car. And it scared me a little bit until I got in there and the girls in there started braiding my hair. And I was like, oh, I can do this. This is fine. This is cool. Like, if I come back here, like, this is actually nicer than my house. Like, we can do this. So then I get a little bit, like, more fearless. Like, I can do anything. And so I also fell in love at that point. The great guy. No, it was all about survival, really. It was really all about survival with him. I felt bad for him. His parents left him. Well, I wonder why, but I would figure that out later. He's like 16 or 17, and I just felt head over heels for him. And later on, I found out that the reason he'd call me over is because my quote-unquote friends would egg him on and like, come on, invite Alicia, because I was the only one working. I was working at 15, and I'd stopped going to school, and I stopped going to school 16, but I was working and I had money and my mom would buy the booze, and so, you know, but over time, you spend enough time with someone, I think eventually he actually started to like me, and he moved in with me and we had to move out of the trailer because the trailer was basically condemned. It was like, we can't live here anymore, and the big fear my whole life was like, DCF, you know, that whole thing. So we get a one-bedroom apartment, and guess who gets the one bedroom? Me. Because I was so, like, I have to get what I want when I want it. I was very angry. And so my mom just said, okay. And so he moved in, and my mom started getting sick again. And we moved again. And now my drinking is getting worse and worse because it's just, no matter how much I consumed, it wasn't enough. And I was doing terrible things to be able to get more. And so I didn't think that my mom was going to pass away. It just didn't, because she was always in and out of the hospital. She'll get out of the hospital. And I was a total brat. And but that didn't happen. They woke me up in the middle of the night one morning. They woke me up in the middle of the night one day and said, you know, it's time to say goodbye. And I did. And I also started singing a song, her favorite song, the Hotel California song. And it was so many people in that room, and they all started singing together. And I don't remember much from that period of time because I was so, like, gone. But I remember that. And after that happened, everybody went their separate ways. I started taking care of myself, working full time with the boyfriend. We got an apartment, and I just went off the rails completely. And when I was 18, he had gotten into so much trouble that we moved him to California. The day I took my GED test, I packed up all our stuff. I flew him to Tampa, picked him up, drove to California. Because in California, like, they weren't willing to ship him back whenever he got caught with warrants in Florida. So we were like on the run. And we got there, and then I found out that his family didn't like him as much as my family did, the other side of his family anyway. And who he said, oh, no, they'll take us in. It'll be great. It wasn't. Like, bamboozled. We get over there, and we're, like, sleeping in the car, sleeping on the car because it's too cramped in the car, in the park, you know, and then just sleep with the ducks. Like, this is what I did. And it started getting pretty dangerous there. I would say in California, and I've hit many bottoms. This one was like I got into the run-in with the law again and the homelessness and the violence. He was very violent to me. And then I started fighting back, but it wasn't the bottom, but it is what I believe led me to the place where I could find AA and get help. So we're living in a really terrible neighborhood, and I just want to go to the corner store. But he comes, and his two older uncles come, and we go to the store, and this is the kind of situations I would put myself in. But I thought I was exempt. I thought that I was, nothing could touch me. And so we go to the store, and like usual, there's some people in there asking him what set he's from. And no, we're just visiting. We're not any sets or gangs or anything, you know. And they say, okay, and then we go outside. And we go outside, we leave the store, and these two guys are standing outside waiting for us. And the guy asks him again, what set you from? And he again said, no, we're just visiting here. And then he looked at me and he said, no, I'm talking to you. And I said, oh, no. And I hid behind him. And then he grabbed my jacket and he started dragging me to the car. They already had the car ready. The back door was open and a guy in the driver's seat. And they had it all planned out. And the guys I was with, what could they do? They're just like, she's not like that. Let her go. Please, like begging. And I just completely like was in shock. I couldn't say anything. Couldn't do anything. And that's one of the many times in my life where it's obvious that God was working in my life, that he saved me. And because for some reason, this guy let me go for a second. And I went running. Even the guy in the driver's seat got out, started following me. The people I was with was like, just keep going. Don't look behind you. Don't stop. And I got back into the house. That was a close one. That was close. So I didn't stop. You know, we went to the store to get alcohol. And that was pretty scary. Made me kind of look at, like, what is going on? What am I doing here? I told my boyfriend when we moved out there, like, no more drugs. No more. Just drinking. And I found out that I was the only one keeping that up, and he wasn't, but I couldn't say anything to him because I was scared to death of him. So what I did one morning, we moved from L.A., and now we moved down to Long Beach because of that whole incident. And we were staying in a motel, and I was working in Long Beach, and I dropped him off at work, and I called my aunt, who I knew was out in the Mojave Desert, because she had moved out there with her father to get help. And I called her, and she said, come on. You know, get your stuff, let's go. So I did. And I drove, you know, the few hours out there. And shortly after that, I don't know how he found me, but he came there. And he knocked on the door, and there he was. And it's like bittersweet, you know? Then I get my own apartment there, and it is the worst. The worst. I drink all night. I stay up all by myself, walking in the streets. I was kind of a wino sometimes. Where you drink like Night Train and Wild Irish Rose, have it in the bag. And I'd stay up all night by myself, and I'd walk in the streets and sing gospel music, gospel songs, on the top of my lungs. It was like I was always reaching out for God, but I was so lost. It's like I always wanted this relationship with God, but I couldn't do it. And so we're in the Mojave Desert, and there's a party. My aunt says, please, when you go to this party, Alicia, will you please not drink a lot? Can you please just keep it cool? Have a few drinks here now, and then you can drink after, because these are our good friends. And we don't, you know how you get. And I was like, okay. I made that decision, okay. I'm just going to have a couple drinks here. I'll bring them a bottle of E&J just to, bring something to the party. And I thought that I wasn't going to drink. I thought I was going to be, I thought I could do it. But what happened was, in the middle of the party, I looked over at the bottle of E&J, and people were drinking a lot out of it, and it kept getting less and less. And I was like, oh, no. It was like, it's just that alcoholism that, I can't help it. I can describe that. Call it the mental obsession. I had already drank before. It was a physical compulsion. But I definitely couldn't not drink. And I did, and I got drunk. And, my mom had recently passed, and this girl, she had this nice house and nice parents and clean clothes and just, everything, it seemed, that I wanted, and that she was so blessed to have it. And she was just being so mean to her mom. And I said, come here. And I called her over, and then I just punched her in the mouth. And then I ran to my designated driver, and I grabbed the keys, and I got in the car after a little squabble with the ex, because he was still around at that point. And I got in the car, and I hit, I reversed, and I hit the car behind me, and then I was trying to pull out, and I hit the car in front of me. And I don't know how long I went about trying to get out of this stupid parking space, but it was difficult. And once I started driving down the road, I realized I don't know where I am. There's, no street lights out there. It's pitch black. It's dark. And I just, okay. I heard the cops. I already heard the sirens. And I just parked the car in the middle of the road, and I waited for them. And they pulled me out, and they wanted me to do some tests. And you know how egotistical and prideful I am. I am not going to pass those tests. I'm not even going to try. I might look stupid. So I just told them, no, I'm drunk. Just take me in. Just do whatever you got to do. I was also very, very, very tired. So tired. And so I went to the jail. That was a disaster. And I got out. They made me, they tell you, your license is suspended, you got to go to DUI classes, probation, yada, yada. And I went to these DUI classes, and I think I spout my mouth off too much there, because, like for instance, one particular time, they asked us to write on the board why we drink, and I wrote, to get effed up. I was just such a how do you describe that without cursing? The next time I went back, they said that I had to go to AA. And I was so angry. I was so angry. I got in the car with my aunt and I said, that wasn't in the paperwork. They didn't say I had to go to AA. I'm not going to AA. Can't I just go back to jail for a few days or something and then, like, I don't have to do that? Because I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic. That's all I remember. Just, I was so scared. Anything that threatened my drinking. So we moved back to Florida. The court said I could come back to Florida and go to AA. And this is when I was 19. Yeah, I was 19. And the first meeting I went to was a meeting in Hollandale at St. Matthew's, Thursday, 8 o'clock. And I sat in the back. I was so scared. And very judgmental. And I didn't want it to work for me. I didn't want it to be where I needed to be. I wasn't ready yet. But while I was going to those meetings, I heard a lady speak. And I had never heard anyone say out loud what I was thinking. And it was a first. And it was undeniable. Undeniable. That I was an alcoholic, too. So I thought, well, I'm an alcoholic, so I can't drink, so I can do other things. I did lots of other things, and I didn't get it. Eventually, those things led me back to drinking, like in 6 months, you know? That's how long I kind of went to the meetings. I was court-ordered to go for 3 months. I did an extra 3 months. Like, there was something here, but I wasn't getting it yet. I needed another couple years of, maybe I didn't need it, but it's just what happened. 2 more years of just total chaos. Things I said I wouldn't do that I did. Now this bottom that I hit. It's around my 21st birthday. My dream was, oh, when I turn 21, I can't wait. Like, this is the only dream I had. I wanted to go to the beach on the boardwalk and be able to drink whatever without feeling like I'm doing something bad or doing something wrong. I just wanted to legally drink out in the open on the beach. That was what I wanted so badly. And it wasn't far into my 21st birthday that I came back to AA. That bottom was like, I was trying to drink and live. Like, I only drank beer now. I would only drink Busch beer at night. I worked during the day. I'd come home. I'd drink. I'd go to bed. But I passed out. I didn't go to sleep. You know, and I started getting very sad. I remember writing all these things down one night, like, I want to run, and I want to do these good things for myself, and I couldn't. And the more writing I did, the more that I saw that it was my drinking that was stopping me from doing these things and being who I wanted to be. So I remember there was a couple prayers. It's all very kind of foggy, but I got on my knees, and I said, God, please do something. Take me out of here. That'd be okay. I'm done. I'm pretty tired. You know, do something. And I remember shortly after sitting at the kitchen table drinking the Busch beer, and I got this thought in my head that I know wasn't mine. And it said, it's time to go back to AA. And I got so angry, and I slammed my fist down on the table because I just knew. I knew. And I looked over at the boyfriend and said, I gotta go to AA tonight. He said, this is a new one, by the way. Same name, new guy. I left the other one in California. And he said, you know, come do this with me and you can go tomorrow. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, that's what I'll do. And here's another one that I know was God, because when has some time gone by after I was like kind of willing to do something different, and then it was still there. When I woke up in the morning, I woke up and I said, I gotta go to that meeting. And I went to a meeting on the beach in Hollandale. And I feel like I remember feeling like I was crawling to where the people were. I was just so tired. And then I sat there and I don't know what I said. I know I cried. And I knew I was, you know, where I was supposed to be. So there's where my journey starts. Oh, that's where my amazing life starts. It's very difficult for me in the beginning. I'm going to meetings every single day. But it's still so painful because all the feelings and the emotions and the racing thoughts, I'm like up and I'm down and I'm up and I'm down, and this lasted for months, but the fellowship of AA is so good, so good. I remember calling my sponsor and saying, I was sitting on the floor in the living room, I was kind of like rolling around, and I said, if there was a beer in the fridge right now, I would drink it. And he said, why don't you go to so-and-so's house? And I said, I'm not going anywhere. I just couldn't. It was like I was blocked. And, you know, 15, 20 minutes, I get a knock on the door. And it's like a fellow member of my home group coming to just sit with me. Just kind of babysit. I was a couple months sober, you know. It was just on me. And I've been praying, asking God to remove the obsession. Because that's what I was taught. You know, pray and you'll get better. And one of the first things I was taught was to pray. And very specifically, too. And then this is what I do with the women that I sponsor. If you can follow some of these small, specific directions, then perhaps later down the line, when you need help with something that is, you know, a big deal or whatever, you would know the importance of taking, you know, the specific directions, not twisting it and making it your own. Because time after time, you tell, you know, when you wake up in the morning, wake up to someone else's thoughts. So you're not waking up to the, I got to go do laundry, and I got, how much money do I have in the bank? And no, first thing I do, I wake up and I read someone else's thoughts. And it's, in the beginning, it was the big book. I read the big book every morning. Now I read something else, but. And then after that, you get on your knees and ask God to protect you from a drink for the day. And then at night, you'll read and you'll thank him. And I was so desperate. I figured, you know, I'm not going to know if this works or not if I don't put everything into it. If I don't put both feet in. If I put both feet in, do everything that I'm told, do my best, give it all I got, and then it doesn't work, then I know it doesn't work. So that's what I did. I take whatever my sponsor tells me very seriously, and when I don't want to do these things, I pray and I ask for willingness, and I work the fellowship and I talk to other people about their experience with whatever it is. And that helps. And so what else? I started sponsoring people pretty early on. And I really wanted to, but then I was scared to. But then this short lady with a short motorcycle at a meeting, she just loved me. And I was, she asked me to sponsor her. And I said, oh, I don't know if I can do that. I'll get back to you. And I was scared to death, but happy at the same time because I've been showing up every day and I've been doing some things and I started feeling better and I know it would work for her too. So, you know, my sponsor, I've had 7 sponsors, so I figured today I would probably skip all the orders and the different, you know, sometimes I go into that. But I had help. I've always had help. You get another sponsor before you say thank you and move on from the current sponsor. Always have help. Always have a sponsor. That's what I've done. So anyway, the sponsor says, well, tell her yeah, and, you know, whatever she says, just bring it back to me. And don't share anything that's not your own experience in AA. And share your opinion. And so I started doing that. I started doing the parrot thing for a long time. And then, you know, that I had a commitment to AA every day. And it made me excited so much to see somebody else getting better in AA. And now, I didn't know in this particular case, the first one, that she wasn't sober and she really needed rides because her little motorcycle was quitting out and she needed to get her paper signed. But there hasn't been any coincidences so far. So I'm taught to look at my part in things. I show up every day. I'm like, I'm not like that girl. My sponsor goes, oh, really? What did you do last week? This is exactly what you did. And you're coming from the same place. It's not, might be the same situation. It's the same selfishness, dishonesty stuff. So I'm getting these things like pointed out to me on a regular basis. And I'm praying. And like I said in the beginning, like, I always wanted this relationship with my higher power. But I couldn't. It's like, I didn't know how to rely on him. I couldn't with the way that I was living. And then AA has shown me how to do that. Going to God and asking God for help and having faith and watching everything working out, especially for other people. And, you know, it's like I took my third step on my knees with my sponsor about a little over a year sober. And, you know, the faith and the reliance, it grows. It gets better. It gets deeper. The relationship changes. And I believe I always got to continue to be changing and getting better. Why not, you know? Well, I've heard in AA some things that you got to be changing and getting better, and that's the way to do it, you know. So what happened? What else happened? I was working at Chili's, and my first sponsor said, it'd be probably better if you weren't serving alcohol, and you should probably get another job. And I said, I got $200 in the bank. I can't do that. And plus, you know, la, 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 you know. And I was walking to a table with 2 blue Long Island iced teas. I remember exactly what they were. I'll never forget it because I was thirsty. And I could just see myself. I didn't do it, but I could see myself like, I'm walking to the table. I said, okay, all right. Okay, okay. And I called my boss that night and I said, I can't work there anymore. I'm an alcoholic. Could you get my shifts covered for me? And in no time, you know, I was looking for another job, and, oh, why don't you go to IHOP? They don't serve alcohol. You probably get a day shift, so you can be in AA at night. And I was like, IHOP? Me? So I surrender again. And I go to the IHOP, and I told them, you know, I can't work at night. And I figured I was not going to get a day shift position because people have been working there like 10, 20 years, you know. And the manager liked me, said he had a day position open, and there I was. I had a job at IHOP. And slowly I put my blue apron on, and it was so painful for me. And then I loved it because there was less side work. I didn't have to give this whole spiel every time I sat a table. And, you know, it just moved quickly. There was less side work. And now I'm starting to see, like, surrender to win. You know, I started seeing it. Doing what somebody else tells me to do, and that maybe my ideas are not the best ideas. And that I don't know what's on the other side of that painful, uncomfortable, whatever thing I'm being told to do. So, and then slowly after that, I'd moved to New York for 6 months. Met a guy in AA, and, you know, it was all great, but at some point it wasn't. And my sponsor at the time was living in New York, and she said, pack your stuff. And I said, okay. So I quit my job, and I packed my stuff, and I went to New York. Because what had happened was is that I was around all these guys. I had a male fellowship. And that was great in the beginning because I was super comfortable, and I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But with some fight, but that was easier for me. And then I went to New York, and then I had a female sponsor there, and like now I'm hopping couches at a year and a half sober, and that was humbling. And I'm with all these women, and now I start building relationships with women and finding out the importance of having friendships with women, having a, it's not the same. It's what I need. So I found out that there, and that was important. I was going to need that along my little journey here. And so after about 6 months, I moved back. We got back together. We've been together ever since. We got married in February 2017. And so obviously, it was like I went away and got what I needed and came back, and all of a sudden we could communicate, and I could say where I was wrong, he could say where he was wrong, and like we could have this really great relationship. But I came back and I started working as a receptionist, and I didn't think I could do that because I didn't know how to switch a phone or anything. But the fellowship, again, go fill out the application, go do it, you know, and I did. And I got a call, and I was driving this 92 Buick with no AC, and it was really, really dirty. And I'd get out of the car in the middle of the summer, and I had all this dirt all, like, from the sweat all over my legs, you know. So I'm painting this picture because I get this call. I'm at the Taco Bell. I've been running some errands. It's really hot, and my hair is all, like, up in a mess. And they're like, we want you to come in for an interview. And I'm like, okay. Well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to get ready, and I'll come in, like, an hour. No, we want you to come now. So I did. I went in there, and I told them about how much experience I don't have, and I don't want this job. I was scared. It's too good for me. Go to the, you know, we'll call you. Well, sure enough, a couple of days later, they called me, and, Alicia, how are you? I was like, you know I don't have any experience, right? He goes, this isn't the Alicia that used to work here? And I was like, nope. But it's like, how many Alicia, you know, works at the same place? I don't know. But that was meant for me. And I knew that. That's beautiful, right? So I went in there, and I start learning. I start soaking up all this information. It becomes an environment that I don't want to work in anymore because my values are changing. I don't value booze, you know, like I did. I start valuing some other things like, you know, honesty and respecting people, self-respect and integrity, and you know, and so I didn't like that environment anymore, and I thought I'd go work somewhere else, better place. So now my confidence is starting to get a little more, and I quit that one because now I pegged the job that I want, and that I want to be an accountant. I never went to school for accounting, but I'm pretty sure I can do it because I've been learning all this stuff I didn't think I could do. And now I work for a really great company. I love working for them. I do accounting. They're putting me through school, you know. So it's like, You know, and I'll get into the whole story about my house, but I don't have enough time for that. Let me just tell you, the last time I was here in October, I was in a lot of pain trying to get a refinance to buy my grandfather out of my house because the relationship became, again, like, this isn't good. I've been in denial and controlling. I'm not happy. I need to get out of this. How can we do this? And I start praying, and lawyers get involved, and all the money that I need is there. And, like, one of those stories. But the last time I was here in October, I was waiting to see if I was going to get approved by the mortgage company. Me, by myself. I had a 400 credit score when I got here, okay? And I got it. It's a lot of money. And he was happy. He got more money than he put into it. And I feel good about that. And now it's, like, so cool that that happened. And all these things that happen, the beautiful wedding and my great husband. Well, that takes work. But the beautiful wedding and the money that it took for the wedding and the money that it took for the lawyers and the buying my grandfather out of this house and the money that is taken to help other people that God, you know, has given me the opportunity to help, and the jobs. These things are easy for God. The hard stuff is the inside work. That's what I focus on, and helping other people, because when I'm helping other people, it helps me. I see myself. And when I'm focusing on God and AA and all that it entails, these things just fall into place. They just come almost effortlessly. And if there's some effort to be put into it, what I need is kind of just like laid out there. I just have to have the faith that the next corner that I take, it's going to be there, and just have to pick it up. I love AA a lot. You know, I was saying, like, I'm not the girl that walked in here. I'm not that same girl. And recently, with this new adventure of discovering things in my life, and who I am and how to get better, I hated myself so bad. And now I'm trying not to be so mean to myself and critical and all that. And so as I'm practicing that, I become more happier and more open. I'm more open at the lake this lake than I ever have been. And it's just, you know, the work, the inside job. I know that. But I used to think, like, oh, that girl. I'm not that girl anymore. And I hated her. And it was like, I want to cut that part out and leave it. Like, just take me now, like, you know, this is all I want to present to you. This is all I want to acknowledge for myself, kind of thing. But recently I thought, thank God for that girl. She made it to a place where I could be in a place where God could get a hold of me and save me and help me, enhance me. So, yeah, that's all I have. Thank you.